my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome, everybody, to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, my co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Oh, hi, Chris. I'm so happy you're my best friend, and our listeners love us so much.
How is your sex life, Dave?
Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, we have a suggestion by a mulleted, lovely man who might not be far away, but we are watching The Room from 2003. I know fuck all about this, Dave. So what about yourself before we pass over to our amazing guest today?
Well, I thought you were going to introduce him, but I'll do that instead. So we are joined by a great supporter of ours. So Blake is the mulleted friend that Chris referred to there. So welcome to the show, Blake.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here, finally.
No problem at all. And it was your choice this week to go with our choice of the week. So do you want to introduce us? And how did you get exposed to this little gem that you've suggested here?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So yeah, we've been chatting for quite a long time now, haven't we, of how I might come on the show. I've got a long list, a growing list of movies. We had some really kind of tasty ones, you know, Heat, one of my favorite films, The Game with Michael Douglas.
Like good ones.
yeah, you know. But, you know, I've done quite a few podcasts with Tony now, and we kind of do some really deep dives, some deep themes, and I just felt like I couldn't come on here and not have a stitch up. I think my previous two episodes were Surf Nazis Must Die and Bad Taste. So I've got a reputation to uphold, you know.
This is the Blake Miles trilogy then, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. And so I went for The Room, as Chris said. I first found out about this. I just moved to London almost 10 years ago, and I signed up to the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square, if anyone knows it. Great little cinema. They do old movies as well. And so one of the ones they do is The Room. And so maybe once a year, maybe a couple of times a year, everyone would get together, they'd dress up like the characters, and it's like a Rocky Horror Picture Show type thing where, you know, they'll call out the lines and they'll throw spoons or footballs at the screen and just have a laugh. And the two main stars, Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero, often turn up as well. And so there'll be a Q&A and drinks and that type of thing. I never actually went to one of those viewings yet, but a couple of years later, my wife and I talked about it. We watched it and we fell in love. It was kind of like looking through your fingers, you know, like you're watching a horror or a car crash or something like that. Something that you can't, you don't know if you enjoy, you can't look away from it. It's just spectacular. So yeah, I felt like this was a classic. You know, you guys do such great films and films that you try really hard to convince us that are great. And that's what I'm here to do today, I think.
So, I mean, Chris, had you heard of it at all?
No, Dave, not at all. Or Blake, I've got to say, fucking magnificent, magnificent pick. And you're saying that about your hat trick ball, it is. But if you're a Patreon, you would have had to watch fucking Cloud Atlas, Blake. And I'm still not forgiving you for that, my friend. So let's not go there. Me and Blake met recently for the first time and had a really good afternoon there. He's got a lovely family, but that doesn't forgive you for picking that fucking atrocity, my friend. So, the gloves may be off
hours.
This one.
Yeah. Nearly 3 hours.
You stitched me up as well because you're like, I'm like, how's it going? You're like, oh, fantastic. Mate, love it. So I was all right, mate. I was listening to you just like outside London Bridge Station, just in hysterics. People must have thought I was crazy. But yeah, well done.
Chris has got a habit of doing that to our biggest supporters. I remember Brent came on from the Cinema Chat podcast, and before we recorded, Chris and Brent agreed. Yeah, Scream 2 is absolutely the best, you know, out of the Scream franchise. And then right at the end, Chris is like, no, the first one's better. And Brent's like, I can't believe that fucking heel turn that you just did. Yeah, yeah.
And then he pulled it on you recently as well with the Austin Powers, didn't he? That was a good one. That was Bastard. One for the ages, that one.
Now, I have to say, I hadn't heard of this up until, I think it was John, wasn't it, who suggested Samurai Cop.
Yeah.
And yeah. Basically, he sort of looking into this, into the background of Samurai Cop, The Room kept coming up. So Samurai Cop and The Room, Miami Connection, which was another one that we kind of loved. You know, these all come up in the best bad movies. So I was kind of aware of the title. And then you look at the kind of poster for it, and it looks very dark. And quite frankly, the title of The Room just didn't grab me at all. I was like, yeah, but it's not going to be Samurai Cop, is it? The whole kind of samurai slash ninja thing in the 80s, you know, that kind of action film, that is right in our sweet spot. So this thing called The Room, it just doesn't grab me at all. But I'll show my hand a little bit. I am so glad that you picked this one.
Nice. Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Because it doesn't have those trademarks that you're saying, that where your guys' wheelhouse is, but there's just something about what they're trying to do and what's presented.
Mm.
And there's just a really, like how many of the films that you guys have reviewed that are trash, but we really love, were they going for trash? You know, I think a lot of them are really aiming high, and this is aiming really high. And somehow it still landed a place in our hearts.
Well, I tell you what, we haven't reviewed one that had a budget of $6 million that turned out like this. So things like Samurai Cop, Miami Connection, what was that? What other one that John chose? For Your Height Only.
What a film.
Filipino exploitation cinema. So, you know, we have reviewed some absolute stinkers that we've loved, but rarely have we had one that basically had six times the budget of Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, God.
I think that went on that guy's fucking hair dye, Tommy fucking Wizzy, whatever he's called. But,
well,
pay for the lawsuits anyway.
I think we should get into our trailer.
Let's go.
Babe, I have something for you. I'm so happy I have you as my best friend, and I love Lisa so much.
Why do you want to know my secret, man?
Mom, he's not what you think he is. And I don't love him anymore.
You really don't know, do you?
Maybe I know more than you think I do, Mark.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
God, forgive me.
Johnny is a successful banker who lives in San Francisco townhouse with his fiancée, Lisa, who has become dissatisfied with their relationship. She seduces his best friend, Mark, and the two begin a secret affair. Meanwhile, Johnny, having overheard Lisa confessing her infidelity to her mother, Claudette, attaches a tape recorder to their phone in an attempt to identify her lover by recording their phone conversations. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
There's no fucking way that movie even plays out how you just described it, Dave. Anyway, this movie is un-fucking-believable. So Johnny who's about fucking 65. And as I said to you both, he's the Crow from Wish. He's basically Brandon Lee's fucking cheapo version. He's about 65. He's pretending, I don't know what the accent he's going for, I really don't know. But this Lisa is getting absolutely a bit of action, but she's not satisfied. Now, I've got a question of sex scenes, because I think he has actually genuinely slipped a one, really. Either that, or, well, I don't know, actually, because he...
What, in a belly button?
Well, I was going to say, Nick, your words.
Yeah.
But the thrusting that's going on, and I'll give you a bit of context, Dave Blake, because I said this to Dave before. So the last month, we've been doing up our living room, right? So we've, like, picture rails down, we've plastered it, we've had it all decorated. I put the TV on the wall fucking twice this week and had to lower it because someone said it was too high, which is not good when you're masonry bitting and you've just plastered the walls. I've had to redo it and everything. Anyway, I've done it all. So I got my Sonos set up yesterday. Because I've put it all on the wall, I needed a 3-meter extendable Sonos cable to plug it all in. Plugged it in. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to watch that film today. I should have done it yesterday. I didn't get a chance. I would put it on. Put it on. Jordan's upstairs. She don't work Thursday, Friday. It's like she's 21. I'm not joking. I'm sat here watching it and I'm like, oh yeah, I would have touched myself when I was 13, 14 years old. And all I can hear is this guy making all the fucking grunting noises. So much so that she come downstairs and was like, what the hell are you watching? And it was one of them ones like, have I forgotten that there's somebody in the house? You know, one of them jokes. It was like, what the fuck? I'm telling you, I would have fucking absolutely creamed myself watching this when I was a kid, because I have got a really bad shoulder. I'm having physio and everything, but fuck me, this would have done me no
fucking thing. Wonder.
I'm telling you, this is just softcore porn, Blake. I'm fucking not having it.
Yeah.
This is just softcore. Yeah. The Red Shoes Diary without David Duchovny. Right? That's basically all it is. And I'm all for this shit because I've watched plenty of these shit fucking stories. It was fucking unbelievable and amazing.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. I actually forgot the sex scene element did stick in my mind, but I actually forgot how many there are. I think maybe in the first half hour, I stopped counting at about 5-6 things. And yeah, I'm not sure he did slip her one, except for perhaps in the belly button, like you say, because his ass, his bare cheeks are right up there. It was a very awkward one. And, you know, on the, perhaps it was the third sex scene, my wife and I were like, no, they've definitely, this is just exactly the first sex scene shoot. Yes. And they're just like, they must have just been like, holy shit, we've got some great stuff here. Let's chuck in another sex scene so we can use more of this. This can't go on the cutting room floor. So that was hilarious. It's exactly the same setup in the bed with the rose. They're like fucking about with the rose, like, and it was funny too because after the first sex scene, they wake up the next day and she's there all like nicely laid down on the bed, and the rose is sitting right next to her. Perfect. The way that rose got used, it would have been battered, absolutely battered.
Literally, I think he'd have used it for other things as well. But you're right, because when he's frosting, he's proper sees Archie frosting, and then you see him again, and I was like, if I watching the right video here? Is it glitched or something? Have we gone backwards? You know, you think you're streaming it, like, what the fuck am I doing? And then it was like, oh no, this is the same scene, but they've just cut short the last bit of it. He's fucking glorious.
I think this opening, cards on the table, is amazing. Now, I have to say, and Blake already knows this, I've watched this like 3 times, plus I've watched the disaster movie, which is about the making of this. I have gone down a rabbit hole with this one. Just everything about it, I have been fully immersed. Now, the first time I'm watching it, I'm just not really sure what I'm seeing, because it's like, you know, Joey from Friends. You'd occasionally see him playing on Days of Our Lives or something. And it just, it's acting shit. And then he talks about like, oh, well, if I need to, you know, look like I'm concentrating, I just put on like I've smelled a fart face or something like that. It is acting on that level. And when you get Johnny coming in, and straight away he's coming in with this weird accent, which he doesn't think he's got, but he's like, hi, babe, I have something for you. Just the tone and the cadence of his voice is just, there's something hypnotic about it. And it's so bad. It's like a really bad high school play or something. And somehow it coupled with the really good camera work, because the difference between this and something like Samurai Cop, For Your Height Only, Miami Connection, the camera work is generally shit. Samurai Cop in particular, you can see they've got no idea what exposure is. The lighting is different. The continuity, you can tell they've shot the same scenes at different locations. It just looks weird. It looks like it's shot by amateurs. This looks like it was shot by very competent professionals behind the camera. But in front of the camera, it's just ridiculous. And I think from this opening scene, I'm loving it. And straight away, you've got Denny coming in there. Denny, who's like his mid-20s, playing someone who's, I think, is about 12. You know, he's coming in and Johnny's like, oh, I'm really tired. I'm going to go to bed. Like, Denny's like, oh, can I come? And then he ends up, you know, interrupting them when they're having this weird pillow fight. And then he's like, oh, I'd just like to watch you guys. And
oh, my like, God. That's
now then, now then.
God, let me know. So I was like, is he the son? And it's the way that Lisa looks. She's twitching as if to say, actually, I won't mind him watching us. So I was like, holy shit, what is going on here? It was fucking amazing dialogue.
Yeah, and Tommy or Johnny, I think he's called in the film, he's just completely cool with it as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you cheeky little scamp.
Can you get out of here? We need a bit of quality time. He's like, well, you're railroading your mum, and you're just like, can you just go out while I give your mum one? It's just like, he's so fucking... And then we get... And this Lisa is absolutely thirsty, Dave. Thirsty isn't even, and like, she's thirsty. Infomaniac. She's not satisfied. She's already been absolutely shown the best time of her life within the first 15 minutes of the movie, but she's still not happy.
It literally went from daylight to nighttime. I'm sure they've been watching Bon Jovi's Bed of Roses, you know, the music video.
It felt very much like something like that. Or the David Brent's Life on the Road, you know, that...
if you don't know me by now. But it just does not look like a comfortable way to, you know, have a bit of relations with your other half. Have you been with for, what was it he says later?
7 years.
Yeah. Like 7 years?
Well, you talk about comfortable. Poor Mark, who's the second sex scene, he just gets it on the stairs. Like, surely you'd be like, can we just go to that comfortable bed?
I mean, at least he was on top, though. Yeah. I mean, the stairs could not have been comfortable for her.
And I tell you what, he's a good-looking guy. He's on modelling, wasn't he? That Greg Sestero, what it's called. What a good-looking... Yeah. I mean, you can see the actor Tommy is totally threatened by this Greg, isn't it? It's like it's a 20-year swing there. If there's anything less, I'd be fucking amazed. And it's just bullshit. I mean, Lisa, you know, she's fucking... Cock first, he's not even in it. You know, she's her completely, her whole personality changes depending on who she's talking to. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I just want to go back
to...
I just want to go back to the... you were talking about the kind of disparity between the actual technical proficiency from the crew and that, and because it's written, directed, produced, and starring Tommy Wiseau, isn't it? And so Tom Bissell, he co-wrote The Disaster Artist with Greg Sestero, and I want to quote him. He sums it up. He says, "It is like a movie made by an alien who has never seen a movie but has had movies thoroughly explained to him." Sounds about right, doesn't it?
It's like someone who's a footballer. You play it once, or you do boxing. You think you're a professional boxer. This guy's literally done one acting class and gone, fuck that. And apparently, this is based on his screenplay or his book. He wrote the book, and that's what it's unbelievable. The snippets and the trivia was like they submitted it to Warner Brothers, and usually you get a response within like a couple of weeks. They got a response in 24 hours going, nope. You know what I mean? So it must be a record. What a film.
So I think one of the reasons why it cost so much was that he went out and bought all of the equipment, and like especially the cameras and lights and stuff, instead of, you know, usually in the industry you just hire them. Because the technology moves quickly. Once you've bought them, they're kind of obsolete. And not only that, but apparently he chose to film simultaneously on 35mm and digital. So he just had a custom rig made for the two cameras to be side by side, because they kind of supposed that maybe he didn't know the difference, or maybe it was at that point, you know, at this at the turn of the millennium, it was just going into digital, wasn't it? So maybe he was just, you know, hedging his bets.
I think he just didn't have a fucking clue what he was doing, to be honest. I think I don't know how I feel about this Greg Sestero, because they go around, don't they, on these cinema watches and everything, where it's got this massive cult following now. And he wrote that book, which the movie was based on. So I haven't read the book. I think you've read the book, haven't you, Blake?
We're partway, maybe a third of the way through the listen to it on Audible. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if the film deviates. So I watched the disaster movie, the Disaster Artist. So I don't know if it deviates from the book at all. But it seems to me that this Greg Sestero guy, he is a good looking bloke, and if you look at his IMDb now, he's aged well as well. But it seems to me that Tommy Wiseau has kind of given him his chance, because even though he's a good looking bloke, he can't act for shit, this Greg Sestero bloke. So there's no question for me of him, like, being associated with The Room has stunted his career. No, he's a terrible actor, and so he's done quite well, whereas it seems that, from what I can tell and trying to research and stuff, Tommy was always a very, very private person. Definitely living on a different plane to the rest of us, yeah. You know, but that's his choice. So he's very private. No one knows how he's made his money. Where has he got all this money from? There's lots of rumors out there about how he could have made it, but, you know, it's for whatever reason, he's keeping that all quiet. And it just seems to me like this Greg Sestero guy's shone a light on someone who's really private, and it seems like they're still good friends, so, you know, maybe he's not got a problem with
I don't imagine he could publish the book without Tommy's permission, like, you know, with legalities and all that type of thing. In some ways maybe it was like a deal to, like, because there's this whole mythology around it now, you know, and maybe the Disaster Artist just helps fuel the mythology. Because this is so fascinating, isn't it? There's so many mysteries around him. He is like, he's almost like a vampire, like Chris said, the crow from Wish.
he's the fucking Highlander.
Yeah. There could be only one.
he's got a weird accent. So-called lived in Scotland, and yeah, he's been saving up money since the 13th century.
I'm going with that one. Yeah.
Amazing. And I think as well, like, when you see the way it's shot, I mean, that scene on the roof with that kid, again, the fucking weirdo Jimmy Savlon kid, and it's all green screened, and that guy just comes and holds him up. But then everyone who's in the film just suddenly ends up on the roof like it's an episode of Friends. It was a good reference, Joey.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And then to wrestle this big, muscly guy down, don't they? And he's just like, get out of here. It's like, fuck off. It's fucking nonsense. Absolutely. And the mum and fucking Lisa, they're like, oh. And then what gets me is when he's saying about the drugs and the crying. And that Lisa's hysterical, like someone's run a cat over. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But also Lisa's mum as well. It's like, what? Why are you bothered about Dennis?
Yeah, they just go really into him, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they're skating around it, and, you know, I just needed some money to pay off some stuff, and that's not how you make money. It's just weird. But I tell you what, the guy, so Zac Efron plays him in the movie, and he is the only convincing actor in this whole movie, because I do believe he's going to pop a cap in his ass if he doesn't give him the money. I don't know what schedule he's on, that 5 minutes becomes so important. You know, and I also don't know what Denny's plan was to keep him hanging around for 5 minutes, because clearly he didn't have the money. But it's that weird thing, isn't it? He's basically got a gun pointed to Denny's head. And then Tommy and Mark run in like the heroes. But the way they grab him if it was an actual gun, Denny's dead.
Denny's gone.
But then as soon as they've taken him away, Denny's like, oh, it's okay, he's in jail now. And it's like, no, he's probably not even at the bottom of the stairs yet.
It's a really weird one, that one, isn't it? All up, because it's like, it feels like Denny's just dabbling in the whole drugs thing. So, first of all, it has to have been a big enough kind of drug deal to warrant a gun, right? And also, what kind of shitty drug dealer is giving out these drugs without getting paid? So, why hasn't he got this money yet? And then to top it all off, after all of this really intense scene, it's never addressed again. It's never brought up again. No. There's no resolution to it.
Oh, but there are so many, aren't there? What about a mum? Lisa's mum. Yep, I've got the test results back. I've definitely got breast cancer.
Yeah.
And that's it. That is the last mention of it in the room. And Lisa's not even asked. She's like,
I'm getting me underway with two blokes. Yeah.
Well, and equally, I don't know if it's in the same scene or if it's just a similar setup, but Lisa confesses to her mum. She says, oh, yeah, so Tommy got drunk and he hit me. And the mum's like, oh, Tommy doesn't drink. Like, that's her number one concern. Like,
yeah, I'm not asked that he's been
around. Don't you talk shit about Tommy?
What about the best scene in the whole movie is, without doubt, Mark trying to throw that Peter guy, the psychologist, off the building, and then literally he forgives him in like 20 seconds, and everything's forgotten, and there's no mention of it ever again. That is, without doubt, my favourite scene in the whole movie. It's fucking glorious.
Yeah, he's literally going to throw him off the fucking building. And you mentioned about the green screen, and again, I don't know how accurate this is, but in the movie, you basically got the camera guys there, and they're saying, like, you know, we're literally shooting in LA. We could have some really good shots. Why would you use a green screen? But, you know, Tommy was always adamant that it would be green screen. So it looks shit. It looks like Kung Fury.
Yes.
But they could have actually shot it, you know, properly on location. And I don't know. It's just bizarre, isn't it? He's literally going to throw him off the building and just completely forgives him. It's forgotten.
Yeah, unbelievable, Dave. Unbelievable. One thing I wanted to mention, which I've gone past it, but I had this as a note, is when Mark slips Lisa one and he's there and they've just had a bit and they get him dressed in that, he blames her and goes, why did you do that to me? I'm like, hang on a minute. I'm sure she didn't make you get a stalk on.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, have sex with a Mark, but you just blame everything on her. And she starts kissing him. And I'm like, this is fucking wrong. If this was the other way around, Dave, there'd be fucking questions being asked about this scene. It was so wrong, that dialogue.
It's gaslighting 101, isn't it? Chris,
totally.
This is almost a crossover with our reality cast. This could be on Love Island. It was so weird how he was like, oh, man. You know, once he's got his rocks off, he's like, I can't believe you made me do that.
He's like that the whole way through as well, isn't he? He plays dumb every time. Like, she lays it on so thick every time, and he's just sitting there like, what are you doing? What's this all about? And it's funny, too, because after the first sex scene with Johnny, with Tommy, and it's all that kind of third-rate boys to men kind of music, you know, real kind of saxophone stuff.
And I'm sure that cost a few quid as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then so he's sitting there, and she's trying to seduce him. What's this? The drink? The music? But the funny thing is, though, is that the only music that we can hear is this really sinister-sounding music, like the score. So it's kind of like she's trying to seduce him, but she's put on this really sinister noir kind of music.
It's just gonna like kill him.
Yeah, exactly. So weird. And then I think they go into the sex scene on the stairs then, don't they? And yeah, the overdubbing, the ADR on this is just, you've mentioned it earlier. It's just horrible, isn't it? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Most of the time their faces are smushed right into each other and he's just like, it would have been all muffled, like, oof, 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 you know, just completely nonsense.
Well, Johnny was having a better time than Lisa, wasn't he, in the sex scenes? Because she was literally just lay there. And he's fucking going, ooh, ooh, like he's really like getting into it. And this isn't usually how these play out on screen. It's usually, you know, the woman's the one making the noises, you know what I mean? As in real life, Dave, I'd like people to know as well, if you don't mind. I've got a story, actually. I'll tell you a story. So years ago, we went on holiday with the lads to Benidorm. You like this one, Blake? So here we go. This is the Chris Phelps story. So there was loads of us went on holiday. And two of my friends, two separate nights, they got with the same girl, right? So one got with her one night, one got with the next night. The first night, it gets fair. Was it a sound? All you could hear was the creak of the mattress going, and that was it, right? And the next night, the other mate, it was absolutely going crazy. Like, absolutely. It was proper, like, this level, samurai cop levels of inappropriate, you know, noises coming from the room. So my mate, who was just making the bed squeak, he's been ripped ever since, 20 years later. His performance wasn't up to scratch. Yeah, yeah.
Like Neil off and it was in nothing... between us movie.
speaking about these sex scenes, how is it that all of a sudden these new characters, these completely new characters, wheel in, break into the house, into the flat, and then just start going at it? Like, who are these people? How did they get in here?
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned them, because you're right. The room seems to be a knocking shop. I mean, I guess the whole point of the title of the movie is that it all centers around the room, but it's weird because they quite often go to other places. So it, that doesn't make sense, but then that's completely consistent with the whole movie. But it's so weird that they just break, or they let themselves into the house and just, you know, start to go for it. And then The best comedy blowjob face,
oh my God,
I've ever seen committed to film. This was proper 1960s Carry On sort like of thing. Where he's going down with the chocolate. Yeah, he's like got this weird blowjob face. That I don't know. You know, these people, obviously you've never seen them in any movies since. I don't know if they were just out of acting school or just off the street or whatever, but I don't know what possessed that guy to be pulling that face, to be honest.
That question, my own face, Dave, watching now.
Is that the one, I've got my notes here, that, yeah, you had that Boys to Men kind of sound in music, and there's also like pirate music, what sounded like kind of a big shanty, and I think it was in that sex scene. I'm going to try and pull some of that up because it was just so weird and so out of place. But what also, so what does Johnny do? Because he's always talking about this promotion and he doesn't get the promotion. A fantastic line that Lisa says, I think, when she says to her mother that, I think it's that to her mother that he didn't get the promotion. She says, the computer business is too competitive. Yeah. And I just cracked up at that because what computer business? What are you talking about?
It's just, I mean, this is, again, it's sort of written by a child, isn't it? It's like...
when you don't know what your parents do. Yeah, exactly. Works with computers.
Yeah, I think my parents think I work with computers, so I guess that's consistent. But, yeah, again, it's just really weird, isn't it? Like, again, if I think to the movie, the Disaster Artist movie, it did seem that... you know, Tommy Wiseau just rattled out this script on his own. You know, there was no script doctor involved in this at all. So, you know, the plot doesn't make sense. The dialogue is, you know, inconsistent. Just all completely hilarious. And I don't know. I'm going to find it hard not... I could quite easily comment on every single scene on this, I think. Because every scene for me is absolute gold. And, you know, one that we talked about before, you know, Chris, you mentioned about the wish crow. When he walks into the flower shop, you know, because he's going to get a dozen red roses for Lisa, and he walks in. It is cracking flags. It is so hot out there. It's supposed to be in San Francisco, isn't it? So it's probably 100 degrees outside. He's dressed all in black and shades on. And then he's like, oh, hi. And the shopkeeper's like, oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't recognize it was you.
I was pissing myself. The person who looks like that, I didn't know it was you. I was like, what's that woman?
it's like the fucking Undertaker walks in and it's like, oh, right. Hi. I didn't recognize you with the glasses.
You've done something with your hair. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh dear. But I mean, the dialogue in that is horrendous, and again, you get the impression that Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero met in acting school, but I don't know what they taught there, because they just don't seem to get it. And I don't know, maybe it's one of those things that when people put a camera on you, you just lose it. You lose all the things that you've been taught. Chris, do you remember that audio drama that we did? That little bit of an audio drama we did for One Movie Punch? Fuck me. How many takes?
And even then,
we
sounded like two fucking rock. We sounded like we Johnny, sounded didn't we, Tommy Wiseau? Oh, no, Dave. What's that over there?
It was this weird, like, Alien versus Predator type thing, wasn't it? I can't even remember any of the lines now, but it was like, oh no, look, it's an alien. It was so wooden. But no, it's great. I just love the back and forth between the flower shop clerk and Johnny. So I'm not going to be able to do it justice. So why don't we have a listen to it?
Hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, can I have a dozen red roses, please?
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you. Here you go.
That's me. How much is it?
It'll be $18.
Here you go. Keep the change. Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so the lines are hysterical. And I do think apparently they did try and convince Tommy to change some of them. And there's the one scene, I think it's on the rooftop, where Greg or Mark is saying, recounting a story about this woman who ended up in hospital. And it's a really dark story, really grim story. And at the end of it, Tommy's just like,
oh, it's a funny story, Mark.
Story.
Oh, yeah, what a story. Right?
And the crew had to just kind of keep being like, you know, Tommy, I think this probably isn't a funny story. Maybe show a bit of concern. But yeah, every time he would just crack up.
He's brilliant. All we needed was Frank out of Samurai Cop just to stand there laughing just randomly in the corner. And it was
Frank. But I mean, again, you could see Frank was acting on his own. And again, with this amateurish kind of camera work on. But again, there's something hypnotic about this, because it doesn't look movie quality, but it does look like a TV show. So there's something about having quality of a TV show, but the school drama play type acting, it's just fantastic. And the out of context reaction. Ha ha ha, what a story.
It's still like the Red Shoe Diaries, because you used to see David Duchovny come on before X-Files. And obviously, as you can probably tell, I watched a lot of them. And he'd be like, oh, I've got this story. And he starts reading it, doesn't he, on a bench or something. And then we get like that Joan Collins Vaseline effect on the camera where it hazes in and out. And then we get this fucking like love story thing. And every time I was watching it thinking, this Lisa's fucking horrible. You know, I think John Hammond had said by the end of watching it, he was hoping that the guys got together, you know, when it was a bromance or something, because it's just...
The thing is, I think it's fair to say that Lisa has not been written by a person who understands women.
Yes.
I think it would also be fair to say it's written by someone who doesn't understand human beings. Now, there is a theory, and it is more of a theory / rumor, that this is almost semi-autobiographical. It's easy for me to say. Almost semi-autobiographical. So basically, the theory is that basically this was a woman that Tommy had encountered in her life. Lisa was based on this woman, and she'd been cheating on him and stuff. And Tommy is essentially Johnny. he's the guy who's working hard, he's, you know, focused on bringing in all the money, and she's just bored and she's fucking all these other blokes.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely does kind of feel like a, what was it, $6-8 million therapy
session. Yeah.
Because throughout, it's always like, every character sounds like Tommy, obviously, but they're all making out that he's the best. You know, the florist is like, you're my favorite customer. And Claudette, Lisa's mum's like, Johnny doesn't drink, you know, just all defending him. He's a great guy. He does all this. And whereas Lisa, I mean, she's not very nice, but they all just absolutely shit on her, don't they? Even Mark, after he's kind of gone through all those entanglements with her, he's not that fussed either, to be honest.
And you know, he looks after Denny, you know, because, you know, he's essentially bringing him up, putting him through college and everything, or school, whatever it is. And it's just so incoherent, the whole story. Like, the first time I watched it, I had no idea why, like, when she was trying to get him drunk and he was making a big thing about, you know, well, I don't drink and stuff. And one thing I have to say, you know, with these sex scenes and everything, Tommy Wiseau, even though he's clearly in the ballpark of 50, I would say, when this movie's shot, he's got a good bloody body on him. And when he says, like, he doesn't drink, I believe that Tommy Wiseau probably doesn't drink. You look at, like you say, he's shredded, isn't he? I think he does have a good body on him. But again, it's just a ridiculous scene where she's got him drunk and, like, for some reason she's decided to put a tie on her head, you know, his tie on her head. And he's like, I'm tired, I'm wasted, I love you, darling. This is a guy who's never actually been drunk.
But the thing is as well, I know you say about the rabbit holes, I'm sure you've done the same, Blake. I know you probably have, Dave. But reading up on Tommy Wiseau as a person, he blagged his age. He said, like, 68, 69 he was born, which when this was made, it would have made him like 34. Well, he wasn't. He was obviously like late 40s. He's about the same age as my old man. He said mid to late 50s he's born. And he's dead secretive about himself. Everything's like a mystery. He's just like one of these unique people in Hollywood. And you're right, he's got a great body on him. He has got a body on him. There's no doubt about it. But it's that, like, Hollywood special where no matter how old the bloke is, he can get with a 25-year-old girl or a 23-year-old girl, and there's no questions asked. Is the book. If you flip that, as we've said it before, haven't we, Dave? And I'm sure you've listened to us say, Blake, you get like a woman in her 40s or her 50s, and she's with some young lad, 25. They'd be like, fuck that, that's bullshit. But in Hollywood, it seems to be acceptable, and it's like he's almost living out his life in this movie, because, like, in Samurai Cop, when the sex scenes are on, the light is terrible. It looks real. It looks like they're properly having sex, don't it? Because you literally see the pimples on fucking Matt Thingy's arse and everything when he's fucking trying to slip one. You know, like you would in real life, don't you? You know what I mean? Like, if you watch, obviously I've never watched amateur porn, but just from what I've heard, but you do see the amateur stuff's a bit more believable, Dave, allegedly. But,
oh, really?
Yeah, but I don't know. Just what I've heard. I think Blake told me that. But it's, but it was the sex scene in Samurai Cop, which was masterful because the lighting was so poor. In this, like, he's just living his life through this movie. And you've got to give him credit that he actually went through every single facet of this movie, and he just included himself. Everything was his name on the credits. And you've got to give him respect there. He's delusional as fuck, but I've got to give him credit to get it to the screen.
What's delusional, I think, is to have a shed on the top of a roof set and imagine that you could climb up the stairs in there. It's just a little garden shed, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's funny when two of them walk into it and then they just got to walk right into the corner so they can both fit in. It's ridiculous.
So, you know, Chris, we might even get, now this is the bar and it is a high bar, but obviously we did get a few tweets, didn't we, from, it was Matthew Caridis.
Yeah.
Who's the main star in Samurai Cop. So he'd obviously listened to the podcast and he was tweeting us about it and stuff. You know, it would be the dream if Tommy would tweet us back, wouldn't it? But
I don't think what we've scored it yet.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure he necessarily would get past 3 minutes, but let's see. So I don't know, just so many other bits. One bit, again, I think was just pure comedy, and I couldn't quite tell. It looked like really bad ADR. It looked like serious overdubbing issues. And again, I don't really understand why, because if you're on a soundstage or something and you've got a green screen back there, so it looks like you're out in the open, you shouldn't have too many problems with, you know, sound. It's when you're shooting out in the open, like Hong Kong movies were famous for it. They couldn't shoot with sound because you've got all the background music in Hong Kong and stuff. But it's this whole thing when he first finds out and he's like, I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Then he's like, oh, hi, Mark. It's that bit. It's like, I did not. I'm like, whoa, is that like some really bad editing or stuff? But the movie plays it out like that's actually how he delivered it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got to that part in the Disaster Artist book, and apparently that one little scene took over 3 hours and 36 takes, maybe something like that. He just couldn't hit his spots. He kept forgetting his words. He concussed himself. One time it was looking good, and he walked out of that little shed and like knocked his head on the top and concussed himself. So they had to cover up the big bruise with a big lot of makeup. And apparently Greg gave him the idea to have the water bottle that he holds and throw it just to kind of give him something to distract himself. Yeah. And eventually that's what it took. He's got such a weird accent, and I think part of why they did so much ADR, because I think either they thought his accent wasn't kind of discernible enough, or he just felt self-conscious about it. But there is a lot of ADR in this film.
Yeah, it does really stick out, because the tone, you know, and the rhythm of his voice, the cadence of his voice, it all just completely changes. It's so jarring. I did not. But that, and that's when he obviously goes on to the whole story where Mark's talking about this girl who's been savagely beaten into a coma. And Johnny's like, ah, what a story, Mark. But despite the fact that Lisa, you know, is insanely bored. And again, this is why you can tell it's written by Tommy. You know, she's getting in these fucking 6 hour sex sessions, but she's just bored with life. Doesn't seem to have a job or anything, just leeching off Johnny. She still goes through and sets him up with a whole birthday party, which I found a little bit strange. But in the background, you've got, you know, Johnny, he's aware that something's going on, and he sets up his little, you know, I mean, Blake, I don't know if you're old enough. I'm assuming you are, but you must have had the 90-minute cassette tapes.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
He takes about 5 minutes to set it up, doesn't he? It's not exactly James Bond, is it?
This is. James Bond is a great, you know, analogy to it, because you're thinking, right, he's this little spy equipment here. He's going to listen to 24 hours of, you know, telephone conversations. But it's like, well, those are 90-minute tapes. But he does eventually find out that it's Mark. But he seems to, well, I wouldn't say be okay with it, but he just sort of plays along for a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's interesting because just prior to him setting up the recording, he overhears Lisa talking to his mother, her mother, I think. And he overhears because he's standing on the little spiral staircase where she got shagged by Mark. And it's a very small room, and he's just on a spiral staircase, like, that you can see straight.
You would literally see him standing there. Some massive fucking goth.
This is ridiculous. It's gargoyle just in the corner of the room as they leave. It's stupid. And yeah, so it culminates in this birthday party, doesn't it? And there's all these new people there that we've never seen before. And They confront Lisa. Oh, that's right, because Lisa says, let's go out for some air. Let's go outside for air, everyone. Everyone goes out. She closes the door, and then her and Mark just start snogging on the sofa.
Seems like a risky strategy.
I think that's kind of Lisa's thing, isn't it? She's just looking for a bit of danger. And, yeah, then some random actor who we've never seen before just comes up and starts, like, going off at her. And just the script is just so ridiculous. This guy is ridiculous. I just, throughout the movie, I just kind of felt, it made me think of Westworld.
Yeah.
That there's these, like, glitching robot-type kind of NPCs that are just repeating these stock phrases. And, yeah, so it kind of comes to a crescendo at that party, doesn't it? And they have a fight. And then again, they have this big fight in front of everyone. Then they're sweet. They make up. Then they have another fight. Yeah, what did you guys think about this ending, this last scene? Because it kind of wraps up quite quickly, doesn't it?
Are we not going to talk about Johnny fucking sniffing her fucking underwear? That red fucking thing.
Oh, that's after, though, isn't it? That's after the party.
Yeah, it's fucking, that is amazing. He's literally shagging that.
He's got the red dress, hasn't he? He's sniffing it. He's got a lob on there, thrusting it into his crotch. Yeah. And stuff.
He's definitely got a stalk on there. Put the lob on there.
He's almost doing an Arnie impression, isn't he? He's like,
and then he's remembering back to him fucking having a bit and everything. And honestly, he literally needs to check his fucking underpants after this bit. He's definitely had a wet dream there. He's fucking absolutely wet for her. He's so fucking wrong. And it's just nonsense. It's self-indulgent bullshit. It really is. It's fucking amazing.
I think that just getting back to the party, though, I found it weird because it seemed like once the cat was out of the bag, Lisa was just expecting, well, you should be okay with this then, you know, and just starts having a little dance with Mark. And then is a bit put out when Johnny starts having a go and stuff.
Yeah.
And like you say, it took me two watches to try and figure out, had I missed this bloke who starts having a go at Lisa and Mark, you know, breaking Johnny's heart kind of thing. It was like, no, we've never seen him before. There's been no build-up. He's not a friend or anything, just a random actor who's going to have a go at them and basically tell them how great a guy Johnny is and, you know, what a terrible thing they're doing. So just utterly ridiculous. But it does, to be honest, the party for me is just the layup for this ridiculous ending where, you know, you get the suicide shots, you know, and as Chris has just alluded to there, basically he's just basically masturbating to fucking Lisa's red dress kind of thing. I don't know, you know, I think he did have the title, didn't he? I wondered if it was, you know, in his mind, the movie could be called Lady in Red or, you know, Red Dress or something like that. Because obviously, that's where it started, isn't it? With the flowers and the red dress and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, there was obviously, I think in his mind, in a weird way, this story had a whole arc and it was coming back to that red dress. And it's almost like the dress, I'm going to do a little bit of a Tony Farina now. Maybe the red dress was some kind of, you know, demonic possessed thing, you know, Tony's big ideas. But, no, I think it was ridiculous at the end, but I love the way basically he blows his brains out. You can see there's blood, like basically the back of his skull must be missing. And then when Mark and Lisa and Denny come up, they're like, is he dead?
JFK, is he dead? I don't know. Yeah.
But amazing.
What did we watch? What did we watch the other week? Oh, fucking RoboCop, when that fucking guy gets about 500 bullets. Like, medics! Yeah. Like, don't need a fucking medic. You need someone to come and clean this shit off. Yeah, he's not getting up from that fucking paper cut, is he? You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. But you're right, the ending. I mean, Denny's there, and, you know, Mark's like, hey, I don't want anything to do with you, but we get that little poignant scene at the end. Yeah. I'd say what, Blake? You've picked some fucking doozies here, my friend. You know, Surf Nazis Must Die was peak, but they've been some crackers, mate. This is on a different level to anything I think we've done. It's just, it's unfucking believable. I haven't got any other words to say, but what a fucking film.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, I think it kind of pairs nicely in a way with my last one, Bad Taste, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because there's that element of, you've got the film, right? But the story behind the film is almost bigger and more fascinating.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm really glad that you guys were able to watch it.
I think, though, I mean, Bad Taste, because the budget was so low, and you understand that this was kind of, you know, developed or shot over multiple years with friends and stuff, I think you can really appreciate there's something innovative happening there. Whereas this, there's nothing innovative, but it's just pure comedy. So I think it's good. It's just in a very, very different way.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Blake, have you got anything to say before we go into our review scores?
Yeah, well, you know, as you guys know, I did a bit of a spreadsheet on your guys' episodes. And we've got 100, and I don't know what it would have been now, but 130 episodes that you've done.
Yeah.
And I think I'm pretty good at picking where you guys will rate things, and I'm not sure about this one. So I've just got something I think might sweeten the deal. I wonder if, can I share my screen, Dave?
Oh, hi, Chris. Oh, hi, Dave. What's up? It's your best friend, Greg Sestero. Hi.
God.
Very excited for this episode. I know you enjoyed the Disaster Artist audiobook. And that is very much what I'd say, what a story. I know going into this episode, you're going to be reviewing The Room. And one of the stories I always tell is Tommy believed he needed to show his ass to sell the movie. He thought it would be very important. So he said, my God, I have to do it. I have to show my ass to sell this movie. Oh, hi, Blake. How are you? My God. Oh, hi, Chris. Oh, hi, Dave. What a story. I hope you enjoy yourself. And I hope you guys enjoyed the disastrous making of The Room, because it's one of those movies be very hard to recreate. And I truly hope, as Tommy would say, I hope you enjoy this film and maybe you go to Cloud City.
Oh, my God.
Enjoy yourself, because VHS strike back. Maybe you have guests, maybe you don't. Anyway, guys, have a tremendous episode. Appreciate all your support. VHS strikes back.
My word.
Oh, you were
what
unbelievable.
A legend you are, Blake.
Blake, that is glorious. Fucking glorious.
Absolutely amazing. Now, see, Chris, that is what is called preparation.
Well, fucking sack me if you want, Dave. You're gonna...
That is amazing.
I'm staying in the background from me court. That is amazing. Thank you, Blake. That is fucking brilliant.
But you didn't see that coming.
No, we didn't. Oh, what I tell you what a good looking bloke though as well.
He is a good looking chap, isn't he?
Yeah. Good sport.
Oh, thank you, Blake. That is fucking brilliant. We'll have to put that on our socials, Dave. That is ace.
Well, I have to say, that is probably the most famous person we've had on this podcast.
Yeah.
kind of regretting a little bit calling him a shit actor before, if I'm honest. But but anyway, guys, after that bombshell, should we get into our final review?
Let's
do it.
So, Chris, I think I'm going to come to you first. What are your final thoughts and review score?
Well, Dave, I'm not easily swayed at all. Never swayed. I stick to my guns, my friend. But I am easily swayed, because that was fucking amazing, Blake. Getting that video from Greg has absolutely sold me down the river. I am an absolute sellout, and I'm not putting it anywhere than to Cloud City, because I didn't call Greg a shit actor, by the way. I mean, if we get Lauren Avedon, I'm definitely having nothing to do with what I said about him, which it does send it to. But no, honestly, that was amazing. The film is fucking awful, but for all the right reasons. It's exactly why we try and stitch each other up on the VHS, which just evolved into, you know, we're supposed to be blockbusters and we just fought that. Let's just try and get each other. And honestly, Blake, this has just been, it's an hour and 39 of a mess of a film that makes no sense. I think you summed it up, Dave, that Lisa is what a 15-year-old pubescent lad thinks women are. That basically, you go around to someone's house and the wife, as soon as her husband's turned, basically a Monty Python sketch, he's trying to fucking grope you and wants you to fucking take your virginity. And I'm all for that, Dave.
You know who Lisa is, Chris? She's what you thought Helga was.
Helga, yeah, Helga. Yeah, when yeah. I was oh, hello. Do you need your light bulb changing? Yes.
Hello. Come it's in, hanging Chris. Right above the stairs.
Yeah. Come in, Chris. I'll hold the ladder for you while holding your thighs. Anyway, is that a light bulb or is that a 40 watt in your pocket? Oh. Anyway.
We have got deep into this script.
We should do a sequel. You know, it was it's an energy saving bulb, actually, Helga. But anyway, okay, I'm getting fucking excited now. But I've got my camera on. But no, yeah, it's just ridiculous, an absolutely awful movie. But again, reading the backstory, and I've got to watch the James Franco movie. I'm definitely going to watch it now. And yeah, Blake, you've just, for once, I'm speechless because you've absolutely done me and Dave like a kipper. That is amazing work, my friend. Really, really good here. Really, really nice. So, Cloud City all day long. I didn't say one bad thing about this movie of the actors, Dave, but you did. So, what are you going to story, Dave?
I don't believe that at all. Chris, I do have to know, when you came into this podcast, and I'm sure, especially on the reality fan base, I think they disagree that you can be easily, or you can't be easily swayed. But where were you going to put it?
First 5 minutes, it was going fucking to Alderaan. And then and by the end of it, I was just like, I cannot believe what I'm watching. This is like everything I wanted in a fucking porn movie when I was a kid. So it was just glorious. And it was the fact that Jordan walked in and as he was fucking dry humping everything in sight, Tommy, that was like, I get it. I got it about 45 minutes into it. So I was going to put it in the middle, to be honest. But now that Greg's done a cameo and Blake's stitched us up, I'm happy to be bought off. You want to buy me off, it's fine. Send us cameos in every week. I'll put you right at the top. Brilliant, brilliant stuff.
Awesome. Now, Blake, how about yourself?
Well, yeah, I'm speechless now because I didn't think it would work. I did Surf Nazis. I did Bad Taste, and they didn't fare very well. Cloud Atlas, you'd have to be a Patreon to find out. But I really needed to bring in the big guns, so that cameo, I was hoping, would just edge it a little bit. Like I said at the start, we'd been tossing up some really great films, some stellar films, and I'd love to still talk about them someday in the future. But one of the things I love about what you guys do is when you're talking about these films and these really shitty films, it just feels like you're hanging out with mates just chatting shit at the pub or whatever. So I really wanted to come to the table with something that we could have a good laugh about, and here we are. I wasn't sure. I thought I would be like a Pleasantville. But for me, I just think it's a Cloud City. It's, you know, like the Cloud Cities are the ones that you could watch again and again. And there's just something about this, you know, some of those like really terrible ones, you want to go through it like it's a rite of passage. But this one I would watch again just for the sheer laughs, the cringe. You know, you laugh, you cry, you're mortified. There's just so much to it. I think I'll finish with a quote, if I can, from Tom Bissell, the co-author of The Disaster Artist. I think he sums it up nicely. He says, "The Room, to me, shatters the distinction between good and bad. Do I think it's a good movie? No. Do I think it's a strong movie that moves me on the level that art usually moves me? Absolutely not. But I can't say that it is bad because it's so watchable. It's so fun. It's brought me so much joy. How can something that's bad do those things for me?" And for me, I think that's where The Room sits. Cloud City all the way, baby. And thank you, Greg. And thank you, guys, for having me on.
Oh, that is awesome. Lovely. So I think I will wrap up. I've not been swayed at all by the shock cameo there. I came into this knowing exactly where it was going. I watched this, I alluded to it at the top. I've watched this movie three times. In the history of this podcast and all the previous podcasts that we've done about movies, I don't think I've done that. I've definitely watched movies twice. I love this. I fucking love this. And I never thought that anything would top Samurai Cop for that mantle of being the best of bad movies. I just thought you cannot get any better than this. And the thing is, what I like about The Room is it almost doesn't compete with Samurai Cop because it's so different. Like I say, the camera work on The Room and the people are obviously good professionals behind the camera. It's just the scripting and the acting in front of the camera that's terrible. Samurai Cop, different kettle of fish. And it took, you know, a few minutes, or probably more than a few minutes, maybe 10, 20 minutes into the first one. But certainly when Denny is on about, you know, oh, I'd just like to watch you guys and stuff. And it's like, what the hell is going on? And then you've got this such excruciatingly long sex scene to start off with. And then that's the first of many that come along. And then he's like the body shape when he's actually trying to hump her, and he's clearly in the wrong position. It's like, are you, well, it just, the mechanics of it don't work, and it's just so horrendous. So this is Cloud City all the way, and I would almost say, you know, it's almost at that level above Cloud City. This, I could watch this again and again, and just discussing it with you guys, I'm like, you know what? I might just finish now and I might just go and fucking watch it again because it is so brilliant. Every scene, I love it. I love it. It's so quotable. You know, of all the quotable movies that we've done, this probably has more than any of those because it's not just the words that are written on the page. It's Tommy Wiseau's delivery of those lines. And I know the supporting cast, and if you go there, there's different little videos of where are they now kind of thing as well. This was another thing I found on the rabbit hole, but it's just so brilliant. The way Tommy delivers these lines, it makes everything comical, and even, you know, just his reactions. Like I say, this girl, Mark's telling this story and he's putting on his best, you know, theater performance story about the girl who gets beaten to a coma. I was like, what a great story, Mark. It's just so, so brilliant. So I absolutely love it. And this is, you know, like I say, Cloud City all the way for me.
Good stuff, Dave. Good stuff. So next time we have another Patreon pick, and this is by my good friend, our good friend, Mr. Matt Bates, who's a Las Vegas lover like myself. So we are going to a film. I've never seen this film. So Matt, I know you're going to be listening, mate. This is another fucking movie that I would have just hidden behind a fucking sofa for us. But we're going to be reviewing Tales from the Crypt's Bordello of Blood. So let's get into the trailer.
From a secret grave in a distant land, Hell's Madam has risen again. And now she's back in business at the Bordello of Blood, where customers go in.
Evening, boys.
This is deep.
But they don't come out.
Mr. Gutman, have you found my brother yet?
He and a friend of his evidently went to a local brothel.
Are you ready?
Welcome to a new chapter in terror.
At least now she'll know what's eating him.
She is.
Lucy, I'm home.
Let's party.
I am Mexican for lunch.
I'm gonna take you for a test ride.
You know, you make it sound really enticing.
From Universal Pictures.
It's holy water, man.
Dennis Miller.
You are out of here.
Ching. Tales from the Crypt presents Bordello of Blood.
You're looking cool tonight, man. You must know Mickey Rourke, huh?
Evil Bites.
Go for it.
think I've watched that one, actually. I think it's one of those. I think it's an anthology.
Right.
So I'm sure I saw Spider-Dan was tweeting about it the other day. I'm sure it's like the Twilight Zone, the movie, which I seem to remember you loved, Chris.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Hey,
no, but this has been absolutely fantastic. And Blake, I really appreciate you coming on. We've been trying to make it work for quite a while now. And fuck me, what a classic you've plucked out of the bag there. Like you say, we might have done the old switcheroo with Cloud Atlas. But more Chris than me, I have to say. But I think you saying, oh, yeah, we could do Heat, or, you know, we could do The Game, you know, we could do these classic movies. No, let's do The Room. Absolutely brilliant. And yeah, to round off that trilogy, I don't think there's many. And I can hear in my ears now, John Hammond is rubbing his hands somewhere, thinking, right, I've got to up my game here. So, no, absolutely brilliant, mate.
Yeah, thank you, Blake.
Thank you so much. It's been great to be here. And yeah, just it's felt so surreal to see you guys face to face, as it were, because I'm so used to your faces being plastered on other people's heads.
Yeah, very true.
So, yeah. Mine especially. Yeah.
You know what, Chris? I realized I missed a trick. I was looking to pick up a bottle of wine, and I don't know if you've ever seen in the Reds, you've got these Australian wines called, I think it's 19 Crimes.
Yeah.
And they've got different prisoners going back. It's an Australian wine, and they've, you know, obviously they've got different prisoners from way back when at the birth of Australia. Not if you speak to the original people, but... there is a guy who is a dead ringer for you. Right? So I should have taken a snap of it. It looks like you with a classic reface, you know, on like Glenn Close or something. So I'll take a snap of it. I'll pop it up on our Twitter.
It always looked like a woman. Every time Blake does a reface, fucking women's ones always look the best on me. You've got like a really good fucking face for him, Dave. You always look like dead cool. I always look like I'm fucking malnourished and he should be in fucking some concentration camp. Which is obviously far from the fucking truth in real life. But there you go. Anyway.
I look like a woman.
Yeah, Blake, you wanker. Now you're on the podcast. I got you now. No, I'm joking. Right, so anyway, thank you, Blake. And we do appreciate, mate, all your support on Patreon and all our other Patreons as well. So the roll call of honour for today is Timothy, Alec, Paul, Carl, Matt, Heath, Dylan, Ken, Lucky Lulu Green, Herb, Jax, Maff, Mr. Blake, Riles, and Mr. John Hammond. I'm with you, though, Dave. John Hammond is going to pull some fucking absolute atrocious movie out of the bag. Without a doubt, that man is. So, Blake, before we go, mate, where can everyone get hold of you, mate?
Yeah, thanks. So, you can just get me on Twitter at Blake Biles. That's BlakeByles. Yeah, hit me up there and I'll be chatting to these guys.
Good stuff. So, Dave, worked out perfectly. What are you going to take us out with today, my friend?
Well, I was feverishly scrolling through the IMDb quotes to find some dialogue with three people that we could all rattle off. But strangely, there isn't. Apart from there's one with Peter, who I think is the lawyer, but it's a bit shit. And also Chris R, who is the psychopath, who's after the money, is also a bit of a shit quote. So I don't know, Chris, what do you reckon?
While you're looking, I'll throw one in the bag.
Go on.
It's lucky that you guys took it to Cloud City, because if you didn't, I would have had to give you a, you betrayed me, you're not good. You're just a chicken. A chip, 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 chip.
That's it, man. Game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back. That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ah! Ah! Get to the chopper!
Anyone ring the bell?
All right.
Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. 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 You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid
yeah,
fool.
Yeah, maybe stupid. You ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months. Oh,
I must have been 18.